Hi there, and welcome to the Video Nasties podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. Just to give you a quick heads up before we start, today's podcast is called, well, it's about Fight for Your Life. And you can't really talk about it without putting some very explicit language in. And normally I just bang the explicit tag on and leave it at that, but with Fight for Your Life, there's a lot of racist slurs. And just to let you know, probably not one to have that playing in your car with the windows down or in front of your kids. Anyway, let's start the show.
I have never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on a video nasty?
Oh,
have you
easy.
Never seen one?
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.
Hello and welcome to the Video Nasties podcast. My name is Christopher Brown. Today we're going to talk to you about something a little different. A little different because it's got content in that is unusual. For the Video Nasties list anyway. Fight for Your Life, also known as Bloodbath at 1313 Fury Drive, Getting Even, Held Hostage, I Hate Your Guts, and Staying Alive. Its biggest USP and the reason that it is still isn't available in the UK is that it's notable not for its violence, although there is some of that, or its sexual violence, although there's a fair bit of that as well, but it's for its language, notably racism, which stopped its release in the 80s, and is also the reason why no one has resubmitted it, I think. Saying something is not not politically correct isn't the best way to sell a film, after all.
We are a nation racked with violent crime. You are about to see a small sample of an extraordinary gut-crunching film that vividly portrays the most sadistic of these criminals.
Get him! Get him!
That's your baby?
That's right.
Shame to make her an orphan. Just do like you told. Ain't no rally gonna get hurt.
Now we put the cuts together and shake up the hands. It's done. We're blood brothers.
Mind if we come in?
Who are you? What is this all about?
Jesse King, ma'am, and I'll ask the questions. You understand?
Hey, Joey. How are you, man? Where the hell you been?
Louise? Do we have company?
Company? You better believe it, Burrhead. Now get your ass in here.
Well, I kind of decided not to come out, so I'll see you later, huh?
Now let's go get some grub, y'all.
Eat this!
Dance,
goddammit!
Dance!
Ah! Leave me alone!
Corey, quick, get nice!
I'm gonna teach these people a lesson they won't forget. Come on up, woman!
Hey, I'm gonna cut her down! You're gonna shoot! Do it now! Shoot him!
Mother, turn!
Oh, God! Please, no.
Hold your fire!
Don't move or I'll blow your balls off.
You ain't even big enough to cuddle.
Hold it, said I.
Just like the rest of your race. No guts, no nerve. You might have it big between the legs, but you ain't got no balls.
When faced with the terror of brutal killers, every cop, every man knows that surrender is impossible. You must fight for your life.
All right, no more killing. Throw the gun out the window, and then you come out. This is your last chance.
A story filled with unbelievable action. A movie of excruciating violence. A saga of extraordinary courage that will leave you cheering. Fight for your life. Experience it soon, here.
William Sanderson plays Kane. Now, he's this hate-fueled redneck who is broken out from jail at the start of the film in quite an exciting scene in set in New York. And with his sidekicks, an Asian and a Mexican, they hole up in a secluded house of a black minister and his family. Very, very harsh words are said between them all. And the minister is forced to take action to defend his family in the end. Among the things that happen while they are terrorised in their own home is demanding the minister dance for him by shooting at his feet, gang raping his daughter, and staving a young man's head in with a rock. We're in strong grindhouse territory here. And this grimness mainly comes from the language that Kane uses. He manages to use every racist slur, not just towards the family, but towards his friends too. It uses it as a weapon to get what he wants. He insists on our minister, who called Ted, who's played by Robert Judd, to call him master. And then he puts his young child on a bit of timber that's by the fireplace and calls him the nigger in the woodpile. The violence and the unsettledness that it causes was so extreme, it caused tension and near rioting in the normally already, to be fair, boisterous 42nd Street screenings in New York. Bear in mind this was filmed in 1977. And there were still severe racial tensions in the US. It's this language that takes a pretty bog standard home invasion exploitation movie into a different territory. It's genuinely uncomfortable at points. And that's down to the work of Sanderson, who probably most of you recognise from being J.F. Sebastian from Blade Runner. He's a nervous, jittering psychopath in this, who understands that words are as powerful as threats. In the end, though, we get into the usual rape-revenge tropes. The kind of things that we see, and indeed this shares most in Last House on the Left, and to another extent, I Spit on Your Grave. It has that same kind of feel of assaulting the audience and trying to offend them as much as possible before then putting them in a position where the tables can be turned and they can get their revenge.
Now, where the hell do you think you're going?
To the toilet, if you have no objections.
Objection? Ain't nobody moving till I give the say-so. Y'all understand that?
But I have to go.
I'm running this show, deputy dog. Now, sit down. But if you raise that hand and wave it a bit, I might recognize you and give you my permission. I see a hand, but I don't recognize the owner. You keep it up there. I'll let you hit the pisser when I'm good and ready. Now, where are you going, King Coon? Junior?
I wasn't going anywhere. I was just stretching.
Keep it up there. I wonder where in the hell the troops is. They ought to be back by now.
Maybe they run off and left you. You got it coming.
Nobody asked you to open your hole. Shut it. And it's for you, little Coon. Come over here and park your ass on that kindling. Sit. Oh, V, if you don't look like you belong there.
What are you talking about?
You, little coon. You, the nigger in the woodpile. And you stay there. And when the pervert and Chino get back, I'm gonna put Martin Luther Coon right there next to you. You be your father and Coon, Act.
Huh? I think the writer straw wise and was aiming for something different. Our three convicts are surprisingly racially diverse. Although, to be fair, our man Kane does in fact still call them, still slur at them. And this is slightly addressed by one of the characters. Kane calls Chino a spick, and Chino has none of that really. It kind of attacks him. But it seems like their relationship is based on the fact that they are kind of hopeless without Kane's elements of leadership. And that's part of the price they have to pay. They want to escape prison. They don't want to be in jail. So Kane, in fact, tries to save them through that. Ling, who is a kind of pervy, kind of rapey kind of gentleman, still gets a fair old bit as well, although it's not quite as explicit, but he doesn't seem too mind. He's quite unhinged, giggling at the possibility of attacking young women. The grandma, the family itself consists of different various tropes though. The grandma who lived through extreme racism. The father is a pacifist minister. The mother distrusts white people. And the daughter is now part of a far more multicultural society than either of her parents. And there's a young boy, unaware of the prejudice that exists in the world. There's obviously some thought that's gone into this. And it isn't as black and white, if you excuse the pun, as it first appears. The script at the end does contain plenty of talk about the nature of power. But this is, in the end, still an exploitation movie. For example, the film was sold in different ways in different areas. There were black and white TV spots created. The black spots playing up more on the revenge elements, whereas the white spots made it look far more like just a bog-standard exploitation movie. A revenge, like a home invasion film. Perhaps more cynically, the film was repackaged as Staying Alive, with a trailer pushing the black power elements of the film, the fighting, the racism that existed.
You are about to see a few moments from an extraordinary gut-crunching movie that will make you get down and shout, "I am proud to be a black man."
I'll tell you where it's at. Black power. That's where it's at.
That's right, Granny. Black power.
Right on.
That your baby?
That's right.
Shame to make her an orphan. Just do like you told. Ain't no rally gonna get hurt.
And it's telling, really, that director Robert A. Endelson and William Sanderson both refused to appear on the Blue Underground commentary track. This is only one of two films that Elderson ever made. This and the sleazy sex comedy The Filthiest Show in Town. Straw Weisman says he's proud of the film, and he's made a living writing and directing and producing low-budget B-movies through the years. I think it's true that it is trying to... I mean, ignoring the fact that the three killers aren't just white, they're also two other minorities, which I think is more to do with trying to kind of soften some of this up. I mean, Kane dominates the film. That is partly Sanderson's performance, but also partly because he just gets to do everything. And when he opens his mouth, I mean, you can just cringe, absolutely cringe. But also because it does try and attack people who are, there for the racism. I mean, you wouldn't sit around and say this is a good film. I don't think if you were racist, you'd particularly go, oh, this is a great movie, this. Kane's such a loser. But he is able to kind of, well, get, you know, he is able to, you know, kind of convey possibly some of the things that the audience are thinking, those kind of grim racial tones. But on the other hand, there is a scene where they there's an extended sex scene between a black man and a white woman, which I think is there quite pointedly to attack the people who would arrive at the cinema hoping for it to be quite a grim tale. I couldn't imagine how it would have played in 42nd Street, or how it would play in a lot of places, in truth. It's so pointedly determined to offend and shock both sides of an audience that it wants to attack you in it from every front. I remember this from a personal point of view. I mean, I've never seen this play in front of an audience. Indeed, it's still not available in the UK. But I remember once going to see the Roger Corman film, The Intruder, at the Edinburgh Film Festival. And it was like a Saturday morning, the screen at like 11, 12 in the morning, you know, really early. First thing I'd gone to that when I got there, basically. And the place was filled with quite, you know, the type of people who go to film festivals and international film festivals at that. And one of the first things that uttered is a grandma says nigger, and like very off the hand, and really puts you at the heart of the Deep South and those strong underlying tensions. And just that word from that kind of like sweet old granny was enough to cause ripples through the audience. And suddenly everyone was on edge and uncomfortable. And now watching Fight for Your Life now, it does work because it does make you uncomfortable. I see a lot of reviews online about it, and people say, you know, it's the classic thing when people are quite offended by something or quite horrified by something, they tend to laugh and try and pass it off to ease the mood. And I think a lot of the responses said, I just laughed all the way through this, which I think is a reflex to the fact that it's quite hard really to watch and quite grim. No one really wins from the situation. Everyone is damaged from the violence that's done from this inbred hate. And I don't think the audience is particularly spared any of that emotion overwroughtness as well. Fight for Your Life received many negative responses from the critics. TV Guide called it a vile, low-budget film that couldn't have found a receptive audience even during the height of tough exploitation pictures. And All Movie has described it as outrageous sleazefest and amazingly racist. It did not receive a cinema release in the UK in 1981. When it was submitted, it was banned. And the 1982 uncut video from Vision On was banned as a nasty in September 1984. And remained on the DPP list throughout the panic, and therefore became one of the collectible DPP 39s, and it is still banned in this country. It's interesting, there's been some talk of whether it would get a release now. I don't think even that's a question, because I think the only two companies that could possibly bring this out would be Shameless, or which is part of Arrow really, and I couldn't imagine them bringing, of all the films that are on the list that haven't been re-released, I doubt this will be the one they would go for. But there is a US uncut release from Blue Underground, so decent print does exist on DVD, and it looks alright considering its age and the fact that it's not been very well loved. But yeah, I mean, as a film, I'm sorry I've had to kind of more review this than kind of goes to the history of it. There isn't a huge amount really to talk about, but it isn't the best shot film ever. It's quite claustrophobic though, but that's because of its location. It owes a huge thanks to Jesse Sanderson to make it so much better than what it could have been. If you put somebody else in that role, I wonder whether it would have worked quite. You know, if you had, say, like David Hess in place doing his thing, so brilliant in Last House, but that's a lot of sexual aggression. Whereas I wonder whether that would play out quite so well with this. Yeah, I think you don't have to like something just to know that it's got power and it succeeds in what it sets out to do. This is a low budget film, under $100,000, and it was obviously made almost entirely for the the grindhouse audience. It's not a wonderful film, but it certainly has power, and I think if you want to see something that makes you feel uncomfortable and maybe question some of your own feelings, then maybe this is the film for it. I do find it interesting, I have to say, that Fight for Your Life is banned because it's racist, and that goes beyond the pale. But a film like Last House on the Left, or indeed, probably more accurately, I Spit on Your Grave, just receives a couple of odd trims and is released fine. I don't know with what that says, but about our opinions on rape or racism, but I do find it interesting.
You know, I just don't understand you people. We come in here out of the blue. We take over. We do bloody well what we want. And y'all just sit there like brown dirt balls on a fender. I mean, what the hell is it with you people?
I won't lift a fist against you, King. All I want for my family and myself is for you and your friends to be out of here. Out of this house and out of our lives without anyone being hurt. That's all. No more, no less. Is that too much to ask? I want to know that, King.
I don't give a rat's ass what you want to know, King Coon, and I'll tell you why. I never asked for nothing from nobody. And that's what I got. Nothing. You hear me? Nothing. Not no money from my tired old spineless father, because he didn't have nothing to give. He didn't die, my pep. He got so tired of tilling his 2 acres, he just melted into the soil. Even the state, the God Almighty state, they give you a place, a cage of your own. But you know what they take in exchange? They rob you of your manhood. You ought to know what I'm talking about, Pops. They cut you off between the legs. You got any idea what it's like to be thrown in the hole when you're just a boy? Thrown to the animals? Let me tell you, it ain't no picnic. Once there was a woman. I thought she was gonna give me what I wanted. But nobody ever give me nothing. Fucking take what I wanted every time. You learn not to stop till you get it. Now don't you worry the fucking kinky hair off your head. Cause soon as it gets dark out, we're gonna tie y'all up in the cellar. Maybe take us a hostage, huh? Like that. I like a woman with spunk.
I die first, you bastard.
I want you to know something, Kay. You can take any material thing we own, but when you get ready to take your hostage, you better take me.
Now, you're just about the most cooperative darky I ever did see. What school you go to? Scrape and shuffle, you?
Daddy, stand up to him. Put him away.
Your daddy's right, boy. Which you rather be,
a dead black man or a lie jive ass coon nigger. You think on that.
Right, well, thanks for all the great feedback and the being in touch and the retweets and everything else. And for everybody on Twitter who's been, you know, been retweeting my stuff, that's fantastic. If you want to get in contact, please do. My Twitter is @orange_monkey. My email address is videonastiespodcast@gmail.com. And you can go to the website, videonastiespodcast.com. And that's got all our articles on and everything else as well. Okay, next week is a biggie. We're going to do Cannibal Holocaust. So if you've got any opinions on that, please send them over. It'd be great to hear your thoughts on what is one of the quintessential nasties. So, until then, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
I have never seen a video nasty. I wouldn't. I have far too much.
How can you judge on a video nasty?
Oh,
have you never seen one?
I actually don't need to see visually what I know is in that film.
Tell you where it's at. Black power. That's where it's at.
That's right, Granny. Black power.